This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor. From the surface of the planet Earth, we go to the surface of the planet Sun. More mysteries. Bob Zimmerman is here. He keeps the website Behind the Black. He watches the monthly sunspot record on the sun. We are meant to be in the run-up to a solar maximum. Last time Bob reported to my memory, we were exceeding the estimate of what sunspots activity we would see running up to the maximum. Well exceeded it. And now, Bob, a very good evening to you. I don't understand this. Do you understand this, Bob? Good evening.
Good evening, John. No, and neither do any of the solar scientists. That's important to note. Just because they have the description scientist doesn't mean they understand anything. The scientists have been trying to predict what the sun will do from solar cycle to solar cycle now for, I'd say, more than a century. And they base their predictions on what has happened in the past, not on what an understanding of the fundamental processes that cause the sunspots. They don't really know. They know the sunspots are related to the solar dynamo, magnetic field, but they don't really understand the fundamental processes that cause this cycle to occur and the flipping of the magnetic field of the sun every 11 years. They just really don't understand that. So all their predictions are based on past performance. They look at past performance and they say, well, this is what should happen next. But of course, past performance is not a good predictor of future events. And they've been wrong the last two solar maximums. And this most recent solar maximum, the NOAA panel of solar scientists, which is supposed to represent the consensus, have predicted a very weak solar maximum. And you can see the graph on my website where I show that red curve, and it's weaker than the previous solar maximum, which was a very weak solar maximum as well. However, since the sun has begun to ramp up to solar maximum, that solar activity has been consistently above that prediction. It's been just a little bit above the high range of that prediction's margin of error. And indicated we were heading for maybe a very high maximum, which some dissenters of that consensus opinion had predicted. Well, in the last month, in April, activity dropped significantly, and it's dropped significantly now for two out of the last 3 months, to bring it down from what is a very high number for this early in the solar ramp-up to solar maximum, to now what is really right again, once again, on the high end of the low of the prediction, the high end of the prediction. So what does this suggest? This suggests, and I don't know really what it really means, but it suggests that the maximum, we might have reached maximum already early by about 2 years, and over the next 4 years we'll be in a very flat maximum for a period of time. That's at least if it matches the prediction from NOAA. The guys that dissented, they don't know any more than NOAA does, by the way. They dissented and said it would be a high maximum. Well, they've issued a correction to that prediction. They now that the ramp-up's about two-thirds complete, they now change their prediction to match the real events so they can say that they got it right. They're saying the maximum won't be as high as they said before, but it'll come sooner. In other words, no one really knows, and we'll just have to wait and see. What is interesting is it could be a very, very flat maximum, which isn't unprecedented, but it's unusual. Why that happens, no one really knows.
We go to images that are stunning. That's the simple word I have, of accretion disks. Accretion disk captured by Hubble. What am I looking at, Bob?
I've got two pictures up on Behind the Black, 5 years apart, of the same star with its accretion disks around it, maybe multiple disks around it. We're looking, it's tilted to us, so we're looking down at the pole, so we can get to see the whole face on the disks. And Hubble's got the resolution to be able to pick it up, and they used the spectrograph camera on Hubble to take these pictures, but they are optical pictures. And what we're looking at is the disks, and disks 5 years apart. And what's interesting about this is that Hubble was able to detect the shadow cast across the outer disk by an inner disk, because those two disks are kind of tilted towards each other. Think of a gyroscope with rings, and when it rotates, it's sometimes those rings are offset from each other. They don't rotate in a flat plane. They kind of tilt opposite each other from angular momentum. Well, that's what's going on here. So the disk's tilted, and so it's casting a shadow on the outer disk, and that shadow has moved over a period of time. And that's what's really amazing about this. This is early formation of planets. These accretion disks are right now in what we'd call the heavy bombardment era. This is what occurred in our solar system 1 to 3 billion years ago. This is when objects are crashing into each other all the time and slowly forming planets. And the shadows suggest the formation of planets going on in a disk, but we can't see the planets themselves. We just see a lot of material on the shadows cast.
You link to an artist's presentation of what this could look like in 3D from the side. And what is striking is that the disks are not on the same plane. They're at odds with each other, and so the crashing is not only within the disk, it's between the disks.
Yes, and each disk is representing possibly an orbital path where a planet will form, and they're tilted to each other, which is interesting because our solar system, all the planets are very, very much on a very straight, flat plane. But here, it looks like the planets are going to form on slightly different inclinations to each other, forming a solar system, but not without everything on the exact same equatorial plane. And that's interesting, because, and it's, once again, it tells us we don't really understand planetary formation, or at least we don't really understand how our solar system is so uniquely different, or at least different than this.
And Bob, you tell me that the scale of this, we're looking at distances from the center of these accretion disks to the edge of the outer accretion disk is the distance between the sun and the Oort cloud, which is most of our solar system. Yes?
Yes. This appears that these images here match very closely to the scale of our solar system, which is really interesting. This is a solar system of formation, very primitive early days of its formation, and it's what our solar system might have looked like several billion years ago.
Now the death of a planet. And Bob, I find this, because there's an animation, weirdly gloomy. Because we're watching the end of something that was born once upon a time.
Yes, the previous image was the formation of planets, and this story is the death of a planet. And what's really interesting to me is in that animation, one of the things about it, using a variety of telescopes, both in space and ground-based telescopes, astronomers now think they've recorded a moment. They capture the moment, a planet just smaller than Jupiter, comparable or smaller than Jupiter, which means they really don't know exact size. It was swallowed by the star. And they have an animation, and I've got a screen capture from it, but you really should watch the animation, because what's most amazing about this simulation, this model, based upon the data, is that when this planet got close, started to skim the surface of the star, it completed a number of orbits skimming the surface of the star for quite a while. It just kept going around, skimming the surface. As it did so, dust was flung out from the planet as it was slowly dissolving and getting eaten away. It's really an amazing thing. And a lot of this is modeling and assumptions, but it's based on a lot of data, and the data suggests strongly that as this planet got swallowed, it flung dust off for a considerable period of time. It didn't just drop into the star. It's like a surfer. It skimmed around the star multiple orbits before it was finally eaten away and taken in.
All right. As I recall, Bob, there is at least one story about the formation of our solar system that speculates there could have been a planet eaten. Do I remember that correctly? Something like that.
Yeah, it's possible. I don't remember myself specifically, but remember, think about the accretion disk we just talked about. You got a lot of objects. You could get big objects close to the star that could get pulled in and eaten in the process of forming the planets. So it could happen any step of the way. Remember, we are right now at the very beginning of this kind of research. We don't have, we're only in the last 20 years beginning to accumulate the information about the formation of planets and exoplanets. So a lot of guesswork, yes, still.
What is Superbit Balloon?
This is a really cool thing that's been going on in Antarctica. It's not a new idea. In fact, at the very beginning of the space age, before Sputnik, they were building balloons to go up in high altitudes to take astronomical pictures, because it seemed to me an inexpensive way to get above the atmosphere and get high-resolution imagery. And so what NASA's got has got a project that calls it Super Pressure Balloon. It's called Superbit, and it has an imaging telescope on it, and it's been circling Antarctica now for about 3 weeks. And they released a series of images they've taken of galaxies and nebula. And I posted one of the more recent ones on Behind the Black. I talked about this last week after it completed its first circumnavigation of Antarctica at high altitude. But this is the now more images released. And the advantage of this is high above the atmosphere, it can get very high resolution, wide field images of larger objects in space, such as the closer galaxies or the nearby planetary nebulas. Above the atmosphere, it can see it clearly. On the ground, even the biggest telescopes, they won't see these objects as clearly unless they use adaptive optics. But if they use adaptive optics, they can't look at wide field objects. Adaptive optics only works on very narrow field observations, such as a star or very far away tiny galaxies. Closer ones that have a lot more detail can't do it. This object, this balloon is doing it. And they're getting ready to launch a second super big balloon to study cosmic radiation coming into the atmosphere. And so this is new technology, the upgraded technology of an old idea that actually is really good, John.
Starship, super heavy, waiting for it to fly, waiting for it to fly to Mars. And Bob takes us to Mars, to a place near the landing zone with already a mystery in place. What is that, Bob?
I guess it's as good as mine. We know vaguely what's causing. This is a mound somewhat near the starship landing zone in the northern lowland plains of Mars. And it's an area where there's a lot of near-surface ice. So this mound is probably related to some form of cryovolcanic activity where the ice pushes up and creates a mound. But it's got on top of it this weird linear lines in the shape of a foot. Actually, someone, one of my readers pointed out. And I haven't the faintest idea what, of course, that specific shape and the linear lines involved, the ridge lines. And that's the mystery, and don't ask me. The people who go on Starship the first time are going to have a lot of interesting geology to look at, John.
And one more image, a boil-and-bake cauldron. Where's this, Bob?
This is also in the northern lowland plains where there's a lot of near-surface ice. And just like you get these those mounds near the Starship landing site, which are cryovolcanic, in other places you get similar things. Think of your simmering tomato sauce, and you get the bubbles that come up. Well, this is what we got here, and it's probably, once again, near-surface ice causing bubbles and pops on the surface in the past. And nothing's going on now. It's inactive. You get some real impact craters here, but most of the craters you see are not impact craters. It's literally the bubble toil and trouble on top of a pot of soup, you could say.
Space engineering, we're headed that way. Bob Zimmerman, he keeps the website Behind the Black. I'm John Batchelor.
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.